going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thank you so much, Capital. It is a Super Bowl edition of the Going Deep podcast, and I'm pumped for the Super Bowl. I've been doing my research, got lots of facts and figures, and we're going to break some of it down for you on this episode. If you want the analysis, we've been previewing the game all week on Fan Checkdown, so make sure you like, favorite, share, subscribe, and make sure you listen live on Monday as we'll break down this game, and it sets up to be a great game. 14 of the last 24 Super Bowls have featured one of these two teams, the Patriots and the Chiefs. And the Chiefs are obviously in this game. Patriots are far from being the Super Bowl. Sorry. Maybe they'll be back now that they have a new head coach in Vrabel. But you are feeling some of the Chiefs' fatigue as we get closer to this game. But I think it's going to be an exciting one nonetheless. Some stats for you. 16 of the last 20 Super Bowl winners were wearing their white jerseys. Who's wearing white this game, you ask? Kansas City Chiefs will be wearing their white jerseys. Game is indoors in New Orleans. Patrick Mahomes undefeated as a starter indoors, which is kind of wild, to be honest, given that he's been in the league for 7, going on 8 years now. The betting favorite has won the Super Bowl 37 times. And who are you asking is the betting favorite? The Kansas City Chiefs started the week favored by 1.5. points. And of course, we know the streaks on the line. Chiefs have won 9 straight playoff games, 17 straight one score games, and they are going for a three-peat. But guess what? As much as I care about that, the thing I've been talking about with friends the most is the halftime show. What it's going to be like, what the fallout is going to be, and is Kendrick really going to play Not Like Us? So that's the thing I want to discuss today on this episode.
We are lucky, I think, in this building, this show is across the network, but in this very building we are in, to share it with some wonderful people across a variety of radio stations. And one of those people is the great Shemroy, who works for Kiss 92.5, executive producer, works on the Roz and Mocha show. I'm not actually sure, DB, that Shem actually sleeps. I'll be completely honest with you.
He doesn't, because he's up early on the morning show and he's doing updates for the various Rogers outlets across the country. One of my favorite people in the industry, low-key, has some great sports takes. I'm tempted to ask him about the Luka Doncic trade, but he's got even better musical taste, musical ability as a singer, and musical insight. Let's tap in with Shem. So it's that time of year. We are going to talk Super Bowl, which means we're going to talk about Super Bowl halftime show, brought to you by our friends at Apple. And we can't have that conversation without having Shem from Kiss, who this is the busiest time of year for him because he's Mr. Black History Month.
Oh my gosh. I just before we came in here, I just had a meeting about Black History Month. I've got to do a special. I got to do a song. You know how it goes.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
I mean, very popular you this time
us,
of the year.
You give us a song every month that is special, but I constantly see the publications. Okay, well, you know, when they go through the Rolodex of, you know, 1-800-DIAL-NEGRO, they get to Shem quick, and this is a busy time. So I appreciate that you made the time for me.
Oh, come on, always. Year-round for you, man, not just February.
How are we feeling about this halftime show? Because normally I'm excited, especially post Jay-Z, Rock Nation taking over it, and it's not just dusty rock bands that I don't care about.
Totally.
In this one, I'm bracing myself.
That's a great way to put it.
It's in New Orleans. Lil Wayne didn't get it. Lil Wayne, super upset. And it's like, I get why you're upset, but like, act like you're not upset. Mm-hmm. To the fact that, you know, Drake, the sixth god, had to go to Australia.
Down under.
He had to go to a different continent to get away. And I thought to myself, leaning in, it can't be that bad. Because the National Football League is not going to let
him do what he did at Staples and play a song calling another massive musician essentially a pedophile mm-hmm. 8 times mm-hmm. over and over. The NFL's not going to let him do that. And then 2 things happened. One, I watched the Grammys.
Yep.
And I saw the entire music industry getting up and dancing to it. And Taylor Swift is dancing to it with whose child?
Ivy, Jay-Z and Beyonce. Yeah.
Yes. What are you expecting to see at halftime?
I'm expecting Kendrick to bring out an HBCU band. They are going to perform the instrumental to that song. And my first thought was he's going to rap the whole thing. After the, like you, like after the Grammys, the thing about the Grammys, just wait, for a second.
To be clear, no one ever performs the entire song of any song.
Never.
Sometimes they perform just the hook because you want to get a bunch of stuff in the catalog.
Right.
Get people on Shazam and mm-hmm. adding it to their playlist. So continue.
But the thing about the Grammys was that normally when they're playing the music of the artist, they play the hook of the record. They play the middle of Kendrick's second verse where everybody could yell A minor.
Yeah, it's the first
one. Which was crazy, yeah. Right? That told me everything I needed to know, though.
Like, Ovo would be the only thing that would
yes, work. Totally. So when it comes to the Super Bowl, I'm going to go ahead and confidently say Kendrick performs a verse. He's going to get to the A minor part and 2 choruses of that song. You 100% know, is going
to
happen.
It'll be hard if he gets to that part and the music stops and he stops. And just the crowd does it a cappella.
Oh, no.
Because then it's not just me.
No. It's everybody.
It's everybody because, yes, it's the stadium. But for the Super Bowl, it's 100 million people.
Yeah. I actually wonder if Kendrick will end his performance with that. Picture this for a second, right? He's doing this thing, and then he goes, A minor. And then the music just drops. And then that's the end of the performance. It ends on that note. That's what I think happens. I think Kendrick is going to use this to, this has been quite the victory lap, right? We've never seen a victory lap.
This is a flogging.
Yeah, it really is. And it's only going to get worse.
I'm astounded. So the 3D chess of it all is what interests me. At the Grammys in a Canadian tuxedo, just the subtle shots. The original song, if we want to go back that far, that didn't start it because this has been brewing
for a while,
but brought it maybe to mass consciousness was Drake and J. Cole.
Mm-hmm. First person shooter.
Bigger than what? Bigger than the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And now, before Drake has played it, granted, it's not like Drake couldn't have played it.
Sure, and I'm sure he's been offered it. I believe that he's been offered it a couple times.
I bet he wish he took it now.
Of course.
Because Kendrick gets there first and is essentially going to be dancing on his grave at bigger than what the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Drake's Teflon. The album with Party that we've been hearing about that's going to drop on Valentine's Day is, I'm sure, going to have, you know, a couple bangers on it. He'll be okay. But there's success and there's reputation. I don't know which is more valuable. But I don't know if the reputation rebounds from this. Even though I think a lot of it is not fair or not founded in fact, perception at times becomes reality.
I don't think people care. This has been, well, firstly, it says a lot about who Drake is and the power of Drake, that it has taken the machine to hit his reputation in the way that it's been, right? This is bigger than a rap battle, right? You've got Taylor Swift, Lucian Grain, Dr. Dre high-fiving a record that is calling you probably the worst thing you could probably call somebody, and everybody's just enjoying it. Billie Eilish, Lady Gaga are all, like, the big names are all coming together and saying ha 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 ha, and for what we know, we don't know that Drake has beef with Billie Eilish, right? We don't think that Drake has beef with Lady Gaga, but they've all come together, as you said, to say we're gonna humble you. Pardon the Kendrick pun. We're here to humble you, and this is what it's going to take. And optically, this is happening while he's on the other side of the world, and to some people hiding on the other side of the world, right? It's to me, if I'm Drake, there's no way you can be Teflon for this. This has to hurt. You know he's petty. You know he watches and looks at every single thing. I think the right move for Drake in this scenario is, listen, keep making music, keep putting out some club bangers, because you need a song to ring off in the club. The Party Next Door album, I'm sure, will be cute. It'll be dope. I love R&B, love party, but you need something that's going to ring off in the club, because Kendrick's got the rest of the year. Because, yes, we've got the Super Bowl. We had the Grammys last weekend. Kendrick's still going on tour for a couple months, right? And when he's in L.A. for a couple nights, you know, I expect him to do what Jay-Z and Kanye did when Paris was a big record, and play that record back to back to back to back to back. Similar to what he did at the pop-up show. It's going to get messy the rest of the year. And if you're Drake, you either stay quiet and don't do anything, or you just continue to put out heat. Don't respond to the beef. It's been done. It's going to get nasty.
So we're both hip-hop heads. I mean, you work in the space. Mm-hmm. I'm just a consumer and a fan. Show, do you care about any of this? Like, outside of people who have been invested in following it and were up in the middle of the night, you know, tweeting and texting and talking about it, when this gets supercharged by the vehicle that is the Super Bowl, are the layman's going to really read into it much, do you think?
I was wondering that myself, because when I saw Kendrick Lamar was picked as the Super Bowl halftime performer, I thought it was interesting, because largely at the Super Bowl, we have musical guests that are so ubiquitous that literally everyone knows who they are, right? Like Rihanna, Usher, Beyonce, The Weeknd, Justin Timberlake, Maroon 5 even, Shem mentioned Lady Gaga, Bruno Mars, Coldplay, right? These are some of the biggest musical acts in the world across any genre. And I think Kendrick Lamar is the biggest rapper in the world, certainly like from mid-2024 to now, at the very least. But to that point, like, his profile only really got raised to this level. I mean, this is a guy who has performed at the Super Bowl already. Like, he has performed at the Super Bowl. And yet we're seeing him, and it's pretty cool, the first solo rap artist in history to headline the Super Bowl. That's pretty neat. But he hasn't really been this famous for more than a year, maybe. And like you guys are talking about, it hit the zenith right now. Not Like Us has been the biggest track in the world for a long time. He won a million Grammys last weekend. So, like, the NFL really is capitalizing on this popularity. But I do genuinely wonder, Shem, I mean, when it comes to the average person, I think the Super Bowl halftime show has often functioned as a way to reach out to people who are not necessarily football watchers. And I do wonder, for the average person, how much they are going to watch this. Like, I'm not a huge, I like rap and R&B, but I've not listened to every Drake track, which maybe is sacrilege considering I'm from Toronto. I've not listened to every Kendrick track. Like, I feel like the rap and R&B I used to listen to is more the Dr. Dre and Snoop and Eminem. I'm less familiar with the current stuff. And I wonder how many of the average viewers of the Super Bowl, of the 100 million plus people that are going to watch, are in the same boat.
I thought the same thing. I think last weekend changed that. I think seeing mainstream, to your point, mainstream stars like the Billie Eilishes, the Beyoncés, the Lady Gagas dancing and performing to and celebrating that Not Like Us record is going to make the casual fan be like, huh, I wonder what this is going to sound like on the biggest stage, the biggest, the most televised event of the year. And I think last weekend changed all that.
But do you think, Shem, that the Grammys, I'm not here to dump on the Grammys by any means, right? Mm-hmm. But like, award shows, the viewership of award shows is largely down. I say this as a huge fan of the Oscars, right? Yeah. I love the Oscars. But like, you know, not a lot of people watch the Oscars as they used to, right?
Fair.
And I think the same goes for the Emmys. I think the same goes for the Grammys as well. I think I saw the viewership of the Grammys was something like 13 to 15 million people in the last couple of days. The viewership number came out. Like, oh, more than 10 times that amount of people are going to watch the Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. Like, I do think you're right, and that there is like millions of people are going to be aware of this. But honestly, it's like 75% of if you're just looking at the numbers between average viewership of the Super Bowl in the last 10 years and average viewership of the Grammys in the last 10 years, like, it's not quite comparable in that sense. So I do think there's some overlap, but I wonder how much generally.
Listen, it's going to be the most talked about thing outside of the game. Right? Like, it's going to be the most talked about thing that comes from Sunday.
So wait, let's just take a Chiefs three-peat. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Kendrick is going to perform. Right? We don't need an outcome. Kendrick performance. And you're not, you know, Sportsnet.ca or ESPN or, you know, Billboard or Fader. You're someone in between. Mm-hmm. Huffington Post. What's the lead the next day? The View.
If the Chiefs win?
The Chiefs three-peat,
yeah.
And Kendrick will obviously perform.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they lose power again in New Orleans. What's the lead from the game?
I honestly don't know. But that says everything, though, doesn't it? Right? Like, you would think the Chiefs, a dynasty of a franchise, should theoretically be the lead. That's a no-brainer. But I don't know that it's a no-brainer. I think this is such a big start. You're talking about Kendrick and Drake, two of the biggest names in music. This is not some regular, you know, unknown hip-hop beef. This is the beef of beefs, right? I generally don't know what will be the lead coming out of this. And it really just depends on that one record, Not Like Us. It really just depends on that.
How do we feel about this as Canadians? I'm one who believes the us is us. He's talking about us as Canadians. Drake, you are not from here. You are not true to this. You are new to this. You know, they is that country, right? It's someone, a foreigner, obviously. Hip-hop having its roots in America, I would make the argument that its roots are in the boroughs of New York, and mm-hmm. that people were onto hip-hop quickly after the fact in Canada, which via geography, it's a lot closer to New York than California is. But having said that, I don't know. We're in a moment now where lines are being drawn. Mm-hmm. People are at hockey games and Raptors games booing. And I just feel like, and I felt like this before, you know, we were tariffed. But I feel a type of way that I have to, one, maybe cape for the person who shares the same city and the same country. But two, reject the fact that he's making a distinction based off of an invisible border.
See, I actually don't think it's based off borders, because I think it's the original concept of Not Like Us, I believe, is way more on racial lines than it is borders. Drake is a black man. Yes, we know that. But Drake has also been told that he is not like hip hop literally his entire career, right? He's light skinned, and we know colorism has a play in all of this. He grew up in Forest Hill, a relatively wealthier area in the city, in Toronto. You know, he didn't grow up on the streets of Compton. He didn't grow up hard. To me, that's what they're saying. Remember, Not Like Us is a global hit, but it really has been sort of co-opted from the West Coast, right? The West Coast have said this is our anthem,
yes.
Right? So I actually don't really believe it's a Canadian versus, you know, American thing. I think it's way more along racial and hip-hop culture lines than anything else.
It's fascinating because, one, last I checked, is not Kendrick's wife?
Mm-hmm.
Is she not mixed?
She is.
And two, let's apply that premise to the song and use that logic. Kendrick has a song with Maroon 5 and Taylor Swift.
For the Swifties.
And they're dancing. Is Taylor like?
Yes,
them. That part confuses me, no doubt. We'll see. You know, Kendrick talks about the fact that, you know, Oakland might be your last stop. We'll see what the reception is when Kendrick does tour in Canada, in Toronto, touring with SZA, mm-hmm. big artist. I'm happy for her to get that platform. But also that part of it is, again, in a way, a bit of a knife in the back to Drake, someone who won. Had a relationship with her in the past. Two, in many ways, put her on.
Sure did.
Three, used her as an example of the fact that Kendrick is not as good as he maybe pretends to be.
And SZA got you wiped down. Yeah.
SZA touring with you and SZA performing at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, that part of it is tough. But you know the music industry much more than me. Is it surprising that she would link up with him for the tour for the Super Bowl? And in a way, pick sides.
You're making me get into my conspiracy bag a little bit here.
Okay, talk to me.
I really believe that this is not a Drake versus Kendrick Lamar. I think if you're looking at this as a Drake versus Kendrick Lamar beef, you're looking at it too in a small view. This is Drake versus his label, and his label have said, "Let me tell you something. all you other folks under me, you need to line up with me. We're taking this guy out. And that includes the SZAs, the Taylor Swifts, the Billie Eilishes, the Lady Gagas, everybody. I think they all fell in line.
It's a universal thing.
100%. In my opinion, I think it's a universal thing. This is Drake wanted to.
So the lawsuit has merit in your mind?
Oh, the lawsuit absolutely has merit. The challenge for Drake is he's complaining.
Filing a lawsuit
is an L? Well, in hip-hop. In hip-hop, it's an L. But he's complaining about them doing things to him that they likely did for him to other people as well. And on the back of this beef, it looks like he's just being angry and petty because he, and you know, to a lot of people, lost this battle. And that's tough. Where I think Drake went wrong, and I've been shouting this to friends and anybody who listens who wants to have this conversation, where I think Drake went wrong in this battle is he said to himself, I am bigger than the machine. The machine needs me. And hip-hop needs me. And what Drake should have done is just continue to focus on making hits. Make bangers. And you underestimated that somebody else could also make hits. Make bangers. And you underestimated the fact that the machine wanted to end your run. But he's also called that in his own music, which is what makes this sort of confounding to me. You listen to old Drake music, he has predicted this. Where we are right now, he has said multiple times, they are going to come for me. Like this, Eminem warned him.
Jay-Z, oddly
Jay-Z
enough,
warned him.
Ironic.
50 Cent warned him, right? They're going to come for you at some point. And still, some of his moves, you know, a little bit questionable. But this is 100%. This is not a Kendrick versus Drake thing. Kendrick is the piece. He is the mercenary that the labels have used, that the machine have used to take out Drake. And look, he's a formidable person. He really is.
So I want to do some rapid fire on the performance and put that to bed.
Sure.
And then transfer to the machine of advertising that is the commercials and turn over to show who's super giddy about movie trailers coming out. Okay, a couple things. One, the marker has been raised because on Christmas Day, Beyonce put it down.
Mm-hmm.
How, in your mind, does that impact the level of production in this performance?
I think we're going to see... Well, if you know Kendrick Lamar and the way that he performs, it's always some artsy thing that I will go over right over my head. You're going to see a lot of symbolism, I think, in this. Symbolism in a way that we haven't seen at the Super Bowl before.
Okay. People in their various, you know, whether it's prop bets or, you know, family pools are trying to figure out what songs are we going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
What songs might start and close. I feel like TV Off has to be one of them because he wants to scream mustard.
Yep. Squabble up.
Yeah. Give us your thought process in people who are, you know, having some friendly wagers around what they might hear.
So I think you'll hear TV Off. I agree with you. I think you'll hear Squabble Up. I think you'll definitely hear Humble. You'll probably hear All Right, right, which is a real big anthem for him. I actually do think you'll hear another one of the songs from the rap beef. I think you'll likely hear Euphoria. I could see him starting it with Euphoria. Get all and then really get into the sort of hip hop groove of it, and then I think, as I mentioned before, he ends with "Not Like Us."
We know SZA, Shem, as you guys are talking about, is going to be a part of it,
right,
and they have a lot of collabs as well. Now, look, I will be the first to admit I don't know all of their collabs. I think they collaborated on a song that was on the Black Panther soundtrack,
All the Stars.
I just also really like the Black Panther movie, so I'm hoping that's the one we get. But what do you think, SZA, when it comes to SZA songs with Kendrick?
Yeah, All the Stars will 100% be on it, and then I forget the one that's on the current GNX album that they have. I forget the name of the record now, but that'll also be there. I think SZA will be there very, very briefly. But All the Stars for sure.
I recently learned as well, Shem, that Taylor Swift and Kendrick Lamar are like actually friends. Like they're not just like they just know each other in the music space, but that they actually are friends with each other. I didn't actually realize that Kendrick featured on like a re-released version of Bad Blood,
is
a pretty famous song. Now she's. Obviously, I mean, actually, we don't know this. I assume she will be at the Super Bowl, but if she is, I'm not saying she necessarily will appear on stage, but could we get a reference to his part of that song, even if it's like a 25 second bit in between his own songs?
Well, there are prop bets on whether or not she's going to perform.
Okay.
I could totally see her performing. Why not?
Really?
Why not, though?
Because her better half is playing in the game?
Sure. But this is, it's symbolism, right? Taylor Swift performing Bad Blood, The Weeknd performing Pray For Me, also off the Black Panther soundtrack, also in a beef with Drake, right? Imagine all of Drake's ops coming together and performing their collaborations. I mean, why not, right? If this is all about putting your foot on Drake and on his career and dancing on his grave, what better way to do it?
I'm out here at the grocery store just reading the label of everything, figuring out if it's made in Canada. I'm going to have to boycott the Super Bowl halftime show.
It's going to get messy.
At this point. That's not the only musical news. It's the only people are talking about. But the anthem, John Batiste, a massive moment for him. I'm excited for him to get this shine. People are talking about whether you go over or under on time. I think he lays this out. I think we're taking the over.
This is going to be a 3-minute anthem for sure. What? Listen, if you're doing the anthem, you trying to just boogie and get out of there quickly? No way. He's lucky he's not doing it in Canada. He might get booed.
Yeah, that's I didn't. Yeah,
honestly,
that's true.
Right?
I mean, we do have a Canadian in the game. Maybe you know, the Brown brothers will boo him. Okay, let's get to the commercials and the marketing aspect of it, which show certainly loves. I've written for Sportsnet.ca for as long as I can remember, recapping the best commercials. Mm-hmm. And every year there's a theme based off of where we are in the world. It's a bit of a time capsule. And so last year it was girls watching football with their dad, and we're going to fake this Taylor Swift insinuation just enough so that the legal team says, okay, you're fine, you're not going to get sued. Before that, it was electric energy. Before that, it was Bitcoin. Before that, it was it Kendall or Kylie Jenner who drank a Pepsi and
cured
racism?
Kendall, yeah.
Right? So there was, there was the racial reckoning, equality, right? Every year there is something. I can't put my finger on what it is now. Like, anti-DEI, like, what is the thing that is of the moment that companies are going to want to harness?
America first is what I think you're going to see.
Wow.
I really
okay.
do.
Is that like Americana type stuff?
Yes.
Shem?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Totally. Great way to put it. Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of we are USA, USA type themes for these commercials, for sure.
We know the power of this, whether you do it well or poorly, or if it becomes misconstrued. Bud Light, still feeling the effects of Super Bowl commercial that wasn't, you know, ridiculously received well in all places. What are you looking forward to when you talk about the game, but everything that it comes with the game?
Well, I'm an Eagles fan, so I'm looking for a win.
I never knew that, Chad.
I've been an Eagles fan since Donovan McNabb days.
Okay.
So I'm a big Eagles fan. So I'm hoping that we get a W, and I'd like to squash the Chief Pete. That'd be nice. In terms of the conversation surrounding the Super Bowl, I really want to see what the conversation is like once Kendrick performs this. This is sort of the final leg victory lap of this whole beef. What does Kendrick do post Super Bowl? Because there really isn't a bigger stage post Super Bowl. So does he go into, I mean, aside from the tour, does he go into hiding? Does he, you know, say, you know what, I've done what I need to do, I'm good for the next couple years? I'm very curious to see what he does that way, and I'm curious to see how Drake responds. That to me, and again, I love football. I'm a Super Bowl guy, but going back to your point of what's going to be the headline, for me, it's got nothing to do with the game. It got everything to do with the messiness around it.
Shem, would you care to give a guess before we go mm-hmm. at who of artists today that have not performed at the Super Bowl? If you could pick out of a hat.
Wow.
An artist that would perform at the Super Bowl going forward. I know, like, the city sometimes matters. I mean, Donovan was talking about Lil Wayne, for example. Like, I know it matters, kind of, but if you could just pick an artist based on your own preferences to perform, is there one that comes to mind that has not yet performed?
Wow, that has not yet performed. That's a great question. Wow, that's hard. I mean, listen, it's never going to happen, obviously. I'd love to see Drake perform. Not going to lie. I'd love to see Drake perform at the Super Bowl. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
You don't think it's ever going to happen?
No, never.
Because?
Never. Well, you've got Jay-Z's involvement. in the Super Bowl. And for as long as he's there, it's never going to happen. Ever, 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 ever. And I also think...
On whose side?
Both. I also think Drake recognizes how crazy it would look if he goes and performs in the Super Bowl after Kendrick. Right. Oh, no way. No way. No. You know what I'd really love to see perform at the Super Bowl? And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know that they've done it. It's Chris Stapleton. I know that sounds random,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that man's voice is insane. I'd love to see Chris Stapleton perform at the Super Bowl. I'm all for that.
I wonder if we get like a palate cleanser at some point. It depends on what happens on Sunday. But maybe like next year they go the complete opposite direction and it's like Sabrina Carpenter or something.
Oh, I hope not. I hear enough of Sabrina Carpenter. With all due respect to her, I've heard enough of Espresso and...
She doesn't Mountain Dew it for you?
No. Oh, no. Oh, God.
All right, we're going to take a break, but we've got more for you. Don't go anywhere.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. It is the Going Deep podcast. Okay, we've gone deep on all things music and ads and marketing around the Super Bowl. Let's, before we let you go, talk about the actual game. Talk about the game with some experts. Throughout the week, myself and Sho on the Fan NFL Checkdown have tapped in with people who know the game at a high level, have a real understanding of it, and can make us understand a little bit more educated, be the wise guy at the Super Bowl party when people are asking questions, you know all the ins and outs of these various teams. Well, we're going to get you set. With a mix of conversations we had throughout the week, first you're going to hear from Lindsay Rhodes and Thomas Dimitroff separately, although you're thinking, have I not heard them together before? Yes, you have. With Sumer Sports, they both host together. And Lindsay Rhodes, you know, from SI Now's Fantasy Dirt podcast. Canadians obviously know Thomas Dimitroff as a great football player at the University of Guelph. Went on to be a GM of the Atlanta Falcons, taking them to a Super Bowl. And speaking of executives who have Super Bowl experience, Amy Trask will take us home at the end of the episode. The Princess of Darkness, as she is lovingly known by Raiders fans all over the globe, talks to us about the things we're curious around in this big game and how the lessons from Al Davis still ring true. Those conversations right now on Going Deep. This conversation is why I love football and I find it the most fascinating sport, because there are different ways to build a roster and allocate resources via the cap to get yourself to a championship. So it's not just about who's the best player, it's who provides the best value. And that's sometimes system dependent. When you look at these teams and their roster construction and how wildly different they are. The most expensive quarterback in this game is actually Jalen Hurts on a per-year basis. The Chiefs have one running back off the couch and one that's a late-round pick, and the Eagles have Saquon, who the Giants didn't want to pay. What lessons do you think, you know, the rest of the league might learn from how these two rosters were built and how these teams found success?
Well, I think that there's a lot there. I think that with regard to Saquon and, you know, nobody wanting to pay him, I think that there's a really interesting conversation that we're seeing happen. It started already during the season. I think it will continue into the offseason about a running back resurgence. And I feel like I somewhat unpopularly am going to push back on that a little bit, because what I see is elite running backs that went to elite offenses, or at the very least, offenses that had really good offensive lines and a good environment for them to have success. And I think that that is, from a roster building standpoint, would be my takeaway with regard to the running back position, is that's when you strike on that elite guy. That's when you pay that guy. Because I know that people have mentioned, you know, how bad Joe Shane looks for letting Saquon leave. And I would argue that unpopularly, would say I think he made the right decision, because I don't think that the Saquon we've seen in Philadelphia is anything close to the Saquon we would have seen in New York on that offensive team behind Daniel Jones and behind that offensive line. To the degree, like, we had questions about his production last year. Same with all of the guys that popped this year. Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs. I mean, Josh Jacobs was bad. His numbers were bad. His production was bad in Las Vegas last year, to the point where I think there were a lot of us that were like, I don't know, have these guys just fallen off the running back cliff? Because it happens fast when it happens. The production dipped so dramatically. And then you put them on good teams behind good lines and you see what they're capable of doing. So what I would do is I would pounce on that guy and pay top dollar for a running back if I have a team where I can plug him in and really max him out. And otherwise, I think it's fine to go get like a Tyrone Tracy or a Chuba Hubbard or somebody on the lower end, because, by the way, Tyrone Tracy's production this year in New York wasn't all that different from Saquon's production last year in New York.
So I want to push back a little bit in the sense that I think some of the issue people had was not just that you let Saquon walk. It's relative to you let Saquon walk and you use what could have been that money on Drew Lock and Devin Singletary, and you chose to pay Daniel Jones, who all of his good moments happened when Saquon happened to be healthy. Yes. I ask that as we cascade forward in, you know, the Maras have been supportive, but, you know, that support only goes so far. How do you believe the Giants front office and coaching staff approaches both the draft and free agency this year, knowing that there's lots of pressure based off of some Hard Knocks clips that I continue to see in my feed?
For sure. And you make really good points. It's how you, it's like the first layer, I think, decision that was made there with Saquon, I don't think was flawed. But then when you go and you look at how money is allocated, I think it's easy to say, okay, that's problematic. And so that is a really good point. With regards to Daniel Jones, you were already locked into that. So now that's a bad decision, but you're locked, right? And so this year, obviously, they have unlocked themselves and will go in a different direction there. I think that the Giants are in a really interesting position this year in that they're picking at the top of the draft, and it feels like they're probably going to go quarterback. And I just think that there's so much cause for concern with that in this year's draft, because – nobody thinks that this is a good quarterback draft. And while it's clear that everybody thinks that Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders are the top two quarterbacks, I think, you know, when you ask people around here, around Senior Bowl, like, do you think that they're for sure better than the people that they're replacing? Like, are you 100% positive? I think that a lot of people are like, I don't know. You know, I think that they're good, but are they going to be great? What's the upside? Is there upside of like elite quarterback that's attached to them? I don't know that a lot of people know that answer or feel strongly that the answer is yes. And so that could put you into another hole, right? Like if you use that pick and you don't trade back or you don't go for a different position, but you got to get a quarterback somewhere if you're the Giants and also the Browns and a number of other teams out there, the Raiders, that need quarterbacks. And there are more teams that are desperately needing a quarterback than there are quarterbacks that are available, either via free agency or the draft. And so you're going to see people move up the boards in the draft just out of desperation. I think that's a poor way to draft, right? Like, so I kind of feel badly for the teams at the top because I think they're in a tough spot.
Keeping it to scouting, I'm fascinated on some of those tools and how they're transferable, because I loved the piece of Aaron Glenn's story when he decided he was going to get into coaching, and he called his mentor Bill Parcells and he said, you're first going to scout. And he said, what? And he said, you need to understand scouting and all of those roles in your organization on your way up for you to be an effective head coach, which you're going to be. You did a lot of those roles coming the way up, and you lined fields at one point. Why did Coach Parcells want future Coach Glenn to first be scout, an area scout Glenn?
I'm going to tell you, it's really interesting. That whole line and that mix, so you're talking about Bill Parcells, and Bill Belichick was the same way, of course. I mean, these guys understood the importance of understanding inside out every portion of football to get to the spot of where they were. I mean, literally, as you mentioned, line fields. I've been around every element of football. So when I got a chance to be a general manager, it helped that I had all these different areas of so-called expertise at whatever level that was, of course. In this situation with Aaron Glenn, I remember talking to him recently as I was interviewing for a couple jobs this year, one being the Jets. Obviously, I did not get that job, but I was reaching out to a lot of head coach candidates. And I was most impressed with my ability to talk to Aaron about that. And his take on it was understanding the nuances of the game, the players that he, you know, positions he did not play besides being in the secondary. That helped him so much when he's trying to put his team together, trying to put scheme together and ideas of how he wanted to approach everything. And so I think it's a great thing for all of those people that have a background with the New England Patriots and anyone like that to really tap into it. I mean, look, Nick Caserio, who's now the general manager, general manager of Houston, Texans, and Nick Caserio, who John Robinson. There's a lot of guys that had their time in New England and were on the field coaching. They were running through drills. They were talking schemes. So that was their side to do that before they went into scouting. Sorry, I'm in the middle of everything here. There's a Super Bowl radio row and people are tugging on me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I found the wrong spot to be sitting down, I guess.
Well, no worries, Thomas. We appreciate you doing this for us. We're chatting with Thomas Dimitroff, former NFL GM here in the Fan Checkdown.
And I wonder what we can learn from these two Super Bowl rosters and how they've been constructed in some ways quite differently. The Eagles have a bunch of blue chippers. The Chiefs have some guys that other teams didn't want. Samaje Perine, Kareem Hunt, Juju Smith-Schuster. Are there similarities, any foundational things between these two teams, although they're much different in how they allocated resources, that maybe we can learn from in terms of why they're constantly competing for championships?
Well, look, we could spend a whole show talking about the difference between, you know, Howie Roseman and Brett Veach. Again, both top of their game right now. I think on the Philadelphia side, I mean, one of the things that's important with Philly and how they build things, by the way, is that Howie Roseman is never afraid to have really talented football people around him. I know this is a little bit off topic, but I'm going to bring it around. That is vital. If you're a general manager that has a confidence and doesn't, you know, wander around with this sort of paranoia that someone's going to either nudge at your job. I mean, Howie's got former general managers around him, which I'm a big believer in. He's got some very smart people that allow him to continue to grow in his own world of evaluation. So I think that's vital. And with regard to their roster and what they do and how they're building their O-line, I mean, they're just kicking butt on the O-line builds. They stay consistent. They build into the future. They do the same thing on their front, their defensive front. So, you know, you're talking about in the trenches how important that is. And they continue to sprinkle the right people around Jalen Hurts to help him thrive. We did that with Matt Ryan, right? Have good tight ends around him, good receivers around him. And then when you have the solid O-line around a quarterback like that, that's massively important. So I think that's a really big part of what they're doing there. And a lot of people in watching them have also thought that Howie and his approach is very aggressive. This is not a sit on your hands job anymore. You can't be conservative GM thinking I have 5, 7, 10 years to put this together. It is not for long, as you guys have heard many times. That's vital. I'm going to quickly flip over to Brett Veach, and that's not fair. I'm not giving him the time, but Brett's a different situation. He's working under Andy Reid, one of the most famous football people in the world now, as he's doing his final pushes in his career to be untouchable as far as the historical successes. And he, being Brett Veach, the GM, is very he's very involved in so many things, but he is the number two there, basically, right? Where Howie is the number one leading the program and the final football say. Brett Veach navigates everything with Andy Reid, and everything that they do, they communicate and disseminate to the rest of the scouting staff per scheme, which most successful teams do right now, right? We did it in New England a lot as well. Getting the idea of every nuance of that scheme is important for the scouts to know, so they bring in the right talent. That is Brett Veach. He's very dialed in with Andy Reid. He's very dialed in with the coordinators, knowing what they need, i.e. when you have Matt Nagy on the offensive coordinator side and Steve Spagnuolo on the defensive side. Man, these guys are dialed in with Brett Veach. It's a vital part of putting together the rosters that they have done there, of course.
I want to talk about the carnival that is the Super Bowl, because ultimately you're there for a football game. And we have seen in the past, and you have seen in the past, players who have been, let's say, distracted or didn't make it to Sunday as their best selves. What can you do to make sure that everyone on the roster keeps the main thing, when you're essentially going to Mardi Gras to play a football game?
Two things in that regard, and those are obviously very astute observations on your part. You don't need me to tell you that. But two things. Number one, take as much off the players and coaches as you can. And again, if you've got the 2 weeks to do that, you know, use that first week to let them deal with all the logistics, who in their family, who in their village of friends, their circle of friends and family may want tickets, who in their circle of friends and family needs help with flight arrangements. Let them focus on that in week one. Help them with that in every way you can. Take as much off them as you can. And in that second week, convey to them, this is it. You've got this one shot. You may never have a shot at this again in your entire career. So the focus has to be entirely on the game. And that's a message that's got to be conveyed by coaches and front office and ownership. Is it foolproof? Is it always going to work? No. But if you loop in the leaders on the team, the leaders in the locker room to help you convey that message, it should work, at least for the most part.
Talk about that one shot. Myles Garrett seems like he's desperate to get one shot. We've hit Super Bowl week, and we've got potential trade news with Cooper Kupp saying that he's going to be traded. Myles Garrett asking to be traded. I ask this through the lens of what is still dominating all of my group chats, and that's the Luka Doncic trade. The art of a deal. If you have a prized asset, one that is very rare, how do you make sure you get whatever's close to fair market value for it? Do you deal with the team specifically? Do you bring it to the open market, but then it can get ugly? See Jimmy Butler. How do you manage the business of it, but also the human aspect of it as well?
Yeah, I'm glad you referenced the human aspect, and I'm going to address that first before turning to the business aspect. These are human beings. And certainly during my years with the Raiders, we traded some players. We traded for some players. We brought players in on trades. We sent players away in trades. But you've got to recognize, or maybe you don't have to, you certainly should, and I would hope all teams recognize, but they don't, that you're this is a human being. You're not trading a desk. You're not trading a refrigerator. This is a human being who may have a spouse, a significant other, children in the community from which you are sending them away. Does that player then bring with him his spouse, his significant other? Does he bring with them the children? Does he yank them out of school? And look, I get it. When I share these thoughts, a lot of people push back and say, but Amy, they make all this money, but. And yes, they do. But they're also human beings. And one thing that Al did that just touched my heart and impressed me, there were times that we traded players where he made sure he was the one to pick up the phone and call that player and explain it. And I think it was meaningful to the players to hear from ownership why this was happening, not from someone on staff. As to maximizing value, it depends on your priority. I know that were I with the Browns, I would do every single thing I could do to convince Miles that he wants to stay with the team. He led the team in sacks. He is a dominating defensive player. And look, I worked for the guy who said to me umpteen times throughout my career, the quarterback must go down and he must go down hard. And that's what Miles does. So I would try to find a way to keep him. If that's not possible, the next thing I would do is make sure that if I did trade him, it wasn't within my division. And I would rather it not even be within my conference. So, you know, different teams factor in different things. What are you going to get in compensation for the team? I would take less or slightly less in compensation to get him out of my conference than I would if I was trading him within my conference.
Thanks so much to Lindsay, Thomas, and Amy. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy the game. Once again, we got you coverage before and after the game. If you want even more knowledge, go to the show notes of this podcast, or if you're listening on radio, go find the podcast, like, favorite, share, and subscribe. Show has written his X Factors for the big game. You can consume that right there, or just go to sportsnet.ca, click on the NFL tab. after the game, Sunday night, Monday morning. Obviously, Sportsnet.ca has got you covered with lots of review content, including reviews of the best commercials. I'll be writing that story. It'll be there for you on the homepage. I'm going to talk about it next week. Can't wait. Talk to you then.